Accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you. Thanks. Could you help me move that the mic over?
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, my name is Ruth, and I'm a food addict.
Hi.
Did everybody have a good free time?
Yes.
Yay. Let's do something physical. Let's everybody stand up if you can. And rub your hands together, shake them off, and just start kind of tapping on your body, waking yourself up. Tap on your face, your head, so you can hear and get your brain going and your body. And then rub your hands together and stretch. Just stretch up. Maybe one. Somebody stretching like this. And if you can, maybe you can hang over a little bit and just relax and take a deep breath. Maybe just tap your knees a little bit, like that. Maybe pull on your ears so you can hear. Anything else anyone wants to do?
Stick out your tongue.
And she's going like this. Anything else anyone needs to express?
One thing is clasp your hands and just go.
Okay, I want to say willingness is the key, and you're great. The willingness to make an idiot out of yourself. That's great. Oh, look what she's done. Ego, okay. For those who missed Tadia this morning. Wow, we got a lot of yogis in here. All right, and then you can stand, sit, whatever you feel comfortable doing. I'm gonna do what I feel comfortable doing, and I'm really big fan of taking care of yourself, like Diana was showing. If you have a need, ask for what you meant. If you're sick of sitting, your butt can get hurt. Walk around, dance, move. Take care of yourself. So we have Q&A, and I also want to talk more about surrender. So I think I'm going to ask and do a few Q&As. Does that sound good to people?
Yeah.
Okay. So this one, how did you, Ruth, become an OA speaker? I don't know who did this. I have been in the program for 27 years. And I have never put my name up to do OA speaking at an event before. They always say, do we have people, blah, blah, blah. And I've learned, I'm going through the steps again. And I'm learning that that was like a sense of control. Because I didn't want to feel out of control. I didn't want to be an idiot. What if I like stand here and I got nothing to say, and I'm, you know, it's scary. And in fact, ask my sponsees and friends, because I'm like, what am I going to say? I'm scared. And part of recovery is feeling my feelings and saying the truth of what's going on. So for me, how I became an OA speaker was I got willing. I got willing to step into that level of service. My sponsor, I'm doing some work around 6 and 7 around some very specific issues. And she said, when we were going through my assets, because it's not just about liabilities, it's looking at what your assets are that you're hiding underneath a bushel. She says, you need to step into a leadership role in your life. And within a week, I got asked to do this. So that's my answer to that question. So, okay. Feeling of being different when abstinent, can't just for our retreat, can't eat with others, feel isolated. Okay, so this is about feeling different, feeling weird. This kind of has to do with the third step, which I wanted to talk a little bit about. So I'm going to get back to that. I feel like I have freedom from food obsession. However, with my current food plan, I am no longer losing weight. I still need to lose about 30 pounds to be at a healthy weight. I'm afraid that changing my food plan will send me back into the obsession, focusing on the foods I can't have or an obsessive diet mentality. This is great. So what really works for me is I have a food plan that I don't control. I have a food plan that I don't control, and I get on a scale. And I let my sponsor know what that number is. And I don't make decisions about my food plan changing. She does. And so, and one of the ways I took my will back around in this area was, oh, I'm abstinent, and I didn't get on the scale for a while. And that can go in two directions. I could start getting underweight, and I can start creeping weight back on, and I've gone in both directions. I've had people in the fellowship say to me, you know, it looks like you're putting on some weight. Or this one guy hugged me, he says, you seem real thin, talk to your sponsor. And that's people loving me. That's because I can't see when I'm in the disease. I can't see that I'm not surrendered anymore. And so those people have helped save my life. So I have to get out of the driver's seat around that. I really do. And if I'm still overweight, you know, by the indicators of my doctor or some outside source, and I don't have a major metabolism serious issue, because it is possible. I had a sponsor who weighed and measured without exception. She went through chemo and radiation, and it shot her metabolism. She had both her breasts removed. And she was eating the exact same food plan, and she started gaining weight, weighed and measured without exception. So that does happen, but a lot of times it doesn't happen, and we might say it's happening because we're trying to understand it. So, thinking about taking out food and my fear of that putting me in the obsession, the thing that puts me in the obsession is my disease. And the way out of my disease is surrender. I can't control my obsession. I can't control my addiction. And so me trying to control my food plan is me trying to control and manage it again. And surrendering it is a miracle in God. And God can keep me abstinent under all circumstances. And if I am overeating and on a food plan that is maintaining a weight that's unhealthy for me, then it's possible to surrender. I've seen many people who started to weigh and measure without exception. Like, they didn't weigh and measure in restaurants. And like me, they ate out a lot. And they started gaining weight, and they said, I don't know why I'm this weight. And then they started to weigh and measure without exception, which means when they went in the restaurant, they took the little scale. And so they really knew how much was I really eating. And then magically, the weight came off. So sometimes it's about being honest about how much I'm really eating. And sometimes the food plan can be inappropriate, but through God, all things are possible. Through God, I didn't make myself abstinent now, and it takes a lot of courage and a lot of surrender. Every time I've had to get new sponsors over the years, and every time I get a new food sponsor, it's very scary, because what if they want me to do something different with my food? I get very, very scared, and that's me, and that's me trying to control things. Yes, thank you. Obsession. So there was a question here about the obsession. What if they'll put me back in the obsession, focusing on foods I can't have? I'm powerless over the obsession. Whether it's I'm in the disease, whether I'm out of the disease, whether I'm looking at letting go of food on my disease or particular foods, I'm always powerless over the obsession, and the only way out is through surrender and a higher power. It's those first three steps. First, surrender. I give up the reins. I give up the reins of control. I can't control the obsession. I just can't control the food, and not just the food intake, but the obsessing about the food. So I give it to you. I pray, like Claudia was saying last night, if you seek and you ask, you will receive. And like she says, the big book doesn't say find God. It says seek God. Pray for God. And God can be an acronym for group of drunks, you know, in AA. It does not, you don't have to believe in any specific higher power. It can be whatever word. It just has to be not you. It just has to be not you. It can be the process of recovery. It can be the group. Here's a group of people who are abstinent, and they're relatively sane. and if I'm not, you know, that's a high, there's something going on there. I'm willing to do what you're doing and see if that works for me. That level of humility is getting out of the driver's seat, which expels the obsession. So does it feel like I answered this pretty well? Okay. So, the first time you were abstinent, where was your sponsor when you started tweaking your food? Great question. I ended up sponsoring myself by the end. I did. I didn't have a sponsor anymore. I knew it all. What do I need a sponsor for? I mean, really, that's, I was very full of myself. And I wasn't always like that. I was so surrendered and so willing to go to any lengths for long, long, long periods of time. And that ego, you know, that it builds over time. It's like, oh, I seem to be doing okay. You know, at first it's thank you, God. You know, thank you, higher power, for this gift and this life. And then, thank you very much, I'll take it from here. You know, thank you for this body, I'll do with it what I want now. You know, oh yeah, I'll surrender, I'll give me the body, okay, see ya. So that really, I mean, there's a little thing. So yeah, I was sponsoring myself, and they say alcoholism is an ism, and there's other things they, I think an essay, they say sexaholism. So there's these isms, foodaholism. Ism is I sponsor myself. So that's a great question. Where is Jimmy Hoffa buried? Recovery is about fun and play. So whoever wrote that is in recovery, I just have to say. I'll get to that one. What were the circumstantial or something triggers that preceded your relapse? I wish I knew that one word. If anybody's good with handwriting, what were the same that got you back again? Thank you. So what were the things?
What were the emotional or circumstantial triggers that preceded your relapse?
Thank you. Awesome. That's great. So, okay. Relapse. Number one, I was sponsoring myself. Number two, I was taking back my will around my food plan, little by little. I was eyeballing it in restaurants. I was rationalizing new things on my food plan when frozen yogurt came out. I mean, that was like a big thing. Caffeine. I was doing a lot of all-nighters in school, and so I started getting, you know, mixing the decaf with a little bit of caffeinated. And that was starting to mess with my blood sugar over time. I got into nutrition. I'm sponsoring myself, and I started learning about food combining. And you shouldn't have fruit with the protein. Well, you know what? Because the protein will slow down the fruit's digestion. I need that as a food addict. Otherwise, it spikes my sugar. So when I separated my carbs, I started separating my carbs from my proteins. It was triggering my carb addiction. So that was a physical thing. I wasn't working a program anymore. I was too busy. I was too busy with school and work and living life. And I was really with it and happy and excited. Too happy to need program anymore. Is that enough? That's enough. I wasn't doing that. And then what got me back? What got me back again was going to meetings. I had to go to meetings every single day. I was sometimes, like I said, going up to 5 meetings a day. I was picking up that phone. I was making phone calls. You know, how is this 3 calls a day? I had to make a lot more than that. And it was so hard for me to make those calls that I would call the OA hotline sometimes because I was embarrassed. And a lot of times someone from my home group would answer the phone. She would pretend she didn't know it was me. I would pretend I didn't know it was her. And then I would talk and she would listen. And it was great. It was really wonderful. And sometimes I would call the damn crisis line and they're like, do you have a plan? Are you gonna kill yourself? No, I just don't want to eat right now. But you know what? I was too embarrassed. I was too embarrassed to call people in my home group. So I was calling but I was making those calls. I was trained, you know, and how they say 3 phone calls a day, whether you think you need it or not. And they're training wheels. They're lifting weights for when I want to eat. Because when I want to eat, you pick up the phone before you pick up the food. And it's really hard to do that with somebody you've never called before when you weren't wanting to pick up the food. And it gets a lot easier when you have a support team, and that support team comes from making those calls, making those 3 calls a day or more or a lot more. So going to a lot of meetings. And I want to say something about the kinds of meetings I was going to too, coming back. I went to OA meetings, and I remember going, I was so desperate, and I'd listen to the speaker for 20 to 30 minutes, and, you know, they'd be overweight, but so what? I mean, we can be abstinent, it takes time to lose the weight, and, you know, I never thought, but then at the end, they said they never got abstinent. They said, I got the emotional recovery and the spiritual recovery, but I'm waiting for the physical recovery. And I'm thinking, why did I just listen to you for 30 minutes how to not have physical recovery? Because I knew, I did not know how to get absent again. I wanted to hear how to be absent. I knew how to be in the disease. I wanted to hear how to get out. I was stuck. And so I found the HOW meetings in Seattle. And I came to Seattle to do a treatment program, actually. It was an outpatient treatment program. I came to Seattle. It did not fix me, but it got me here where there was strong HOW recovery. And going to meetings where people were abstinent and they were weighing and measuring their food, free from sugar and flour, hearing that message again and again, I really needed it. And then I have to say something. So that this was important to me about the kinds of meetings I went to. Is anyone here familiar with the gray sheet? So, it's the original OA food plan, basically. Somebody in OA created it, and it was about dealing with carbohydrate, basically, addiction. And for a long time, it was the food plan, and then people didn't like that it was that food plan, so they created other food plans, and then there were two food plans, and then there was a book of food plans, and the gray sheet was called the orange sheet and the pink sheet, but then they decided to call it the gray sheet because it was cheaper than the orange and the pink paper. But it's the old, there are people, and it started in the 60s, and there are people that have been continuously abstinent for decades with this. And there are very specific gray sheet meetings. Well, in Seattle at the time, there was an amazing gray sheet meeting on Saturday morning. I loved it, Gift of Grace Church. I love the name because abstinence is totally a gift of grace. It's not me. And that meeting just saved my life because I was going to HOW meetings. And at the time, my sponsor was slipping in HOW, and I didn't want to get a new sponsor because I was afraid of change, and what are they going to have me do? So I stuck with her a little too long before I got a new sponsor, and I kept hearing people say, well, I have slips every now and then, you know? And it started messing with me because I know once I cross that line, where it goes, and I didn't want to go there. And so I found this meeting, and I heard that AA, don't drink no matter what message. Don't eat no matter what. And I don't think I'd be absent if it wasn't for that meeting. And I remember the Gray Sheet meeting joined the HOW intergroup at the time, and there was all this unity with HOW and Gray Sheet. And it really strengthened the community, and I think they resented it because it might have weakened their community a little bit. But it strengthened ours, and I'm grateful. I'm just so grateful. And so I just accredit the Gray Sheet meetings and the strength, and they're still around, no matter what meetings, for my abstinence today. So, although I'm abstinent, I'm still obsessed with food. The food comes first, won't wait for another minute if someone interrupts. You know what, I'm an addict. I just am an addict, and there's a few things going on. So there's the obsession of the mind, but there's also the phenomenon of craving. Sometimes when I'm obsessed with food, there could be something physically in my body causing the phenomenon of craving, causing these low-level cravings in me. And so sometimes it's the food. It really is the food. Sometimes it's about the food till it's not about the food. If there's something, if my drug's in me causing some cravings, and I'll address the first, the physical possibility and the mental possibility. So I remember I had about a few years of abstinence. I don't remember how many, like 3 years of abstinence. And I was at World Service doing service, and somebody asked me to help her design a food plan because she'd been in OA for over a decade. She's overweight. She never lost the weight. She never really had a food plan, and they were really pushing it, and she heard a workshop. She says, could you help me develop one? And it was really hard for her to be humble and ask, and I'm like, well, I only do that for people I sponsor because I'd experienced doing that to people I didn't sponsor, and it was like a diet. It didn't work. And she's like, well, I'm kind of asking that. Like, she's having a hard time. Like, okay. And I remember I wrote on the food plan on a napkin to her, or whatever it was. And I wrote down a bunch of the names of sugar. There's a lot of names of sugar. And it was very common in HOW and Gray Sheet and all this. You know, you can have it if sugar is fifth or lower on the ingredients list. I forgot to write, except if it's fifth or lower. She had the easiest abstinence of anyone I had ever sponsored up to that point. Craving free, obsession free. I mean, it took a week or so, but then it was gone. That was not my experience. I had many of those middle of the night calls to those hotlines for a long time with it. And then the next person I sponsored, who's really, really struggling with some slips, asked me, same thing. I didn't put I didn't put it down. And she had an easy time of it.
So you had absolutely, so you didn't have that phrase, so it was no sugar whatsoever.
Yeah, no sugar whatsoever, even if it's fifth or lower, no flour. Any of the things that we say no to, even if it's fifth or lower on the ingredients list, like condiment, for example, might have sugar listed six. So they weren't even doing that. I did that with a third sponsee, no cravings. And then I said to my sponsor, you think I should try this? And I did. And you know what? There was these low-level kind of little cravings in the background I didn't know were there until they went away. Mm-hmm. And things just got, the food just got quieter. And so, and then one of my sponsees pointed out, thank you very much, pointed out that there's somebody in the recovery field for food addiction who's a nutritionist, has written books on it, and she had this thing called the no sugar tolerance, why not to even have sugar fifth or lower. She was a nutritionist that dealt with food addicts. So it's like, okay. So here's another, it's a level of surrender and willingness to do it, but it's also a physical thing. I mean, it's so much easier to not have cravings screaming at me, just like an alcoholic who's having just a little bit of alcohol. Yes?
I think they found a sneaky way of acting as if there isn't that much sugar, and by putting three different types of sugar together so they could list them really low.
Yes, they've actually gotten even sneakier than that. You know, and there's a lot of names for, this is a list of names of sugar, by the way. And this is not complete. And if you ever see natural flavors on something, they do not legally have to tell you if there's sugar in it. In fact, there can be animal product in it if you're a vegan. There can be gluten in it if you're insanely gluten intolerant. And what the companies do is they buy the ingredients from a third party, so they don't even know for sure what's in it. I have called the top of the top of natural food companies, and they could not tell me what it was. And I've had a sponsee who has gone out on soy milk that had natural vanilla flavoring. She would say she went out on it. And we, in our community, we're like, oh, this is pretty good. And I had one sponsee that she's like, oh, this is causing cravings. There's something in there. So we're like, oh, okay, well, maybe we'll give it up or whatever. And then this one sponsee, she was just, she ended up in relapse, and she called me. She was living in Los Angeles. She was a year into her relapse, and she was binging at Whole Foods, and she was so afraid that the hell people were going to see her there and blah, blah, blah. But she knew that it was that soy milk, and she says, even though I'm binging on all sorts of crap, I know I'm not willing to give up the soy milk. It's just soy milk with natural flavors in it. So that taught me a lot. And then she eventually came back and got out of relapse. Yes?
What about stevia?
So we're getting into too much specifics here, but it's a mixed bag. It's a mixed bag, and then there's more natural stevia, and then there's more refined stevia, the white stuff and the green stuff. Mm-hmm. And then some people say it does cause cravings, other people say it doesn't, so that's one of those. So I'm in the camp of whoever said, when in doubt, leave it out. Oh, over lunch, somebody said, when in doubt, leave it out. So better safe than sorry. So. But the point is, they're sneaky, natural flavors. Doesn't that sound like, you know, broccoli flavoring or something, you know? Okay, so that's the physical obsession. So let's say, you know, I'm always going to be an addict. You go to an AA meeting, and someone who's been sober 30 years says, you know, my cousin died, and of course the first thing I wanted to do was drink, you know? Or, you know, somebody hit me. I was in the car, somebody hit me, and the first thing that occurred to me was, maybe I should have something to drink, you know? I'm never going to be cured. All I have is a daily reprieve, and sometimes that obsession, I'm still can be obsessed with the food. So if it's not physical, and if it's happening all the time, I would look into surrendering, higher power, praying to have the obsession removed. Praying, I know this is real dramatic of me, but I like getting on my knees. And the steps used to say, it was on the sixth step, on our knee, or humbly asked him, on our knees. Because it's about saying, I give you, I don't have the power. I need the power. Please give me the power. And the humility in that process, you don't have to believe in God to do that. The humility of that process of saying, I can't control this obsession. Please take it. It opens up a space for something greater than me to come in and remove it. And having a sponsor, being absent, making sure I have my sponsor, and maybe my sponsor will give me some good assignments to what to focus my attention on, to focus on the steps, focus on being of service, helping, if I'm absent but I'm assessing, work with another alcoholic, as it says in the big book, work with another food addict, pass it on. If you have a month of abstinence, you have something to give somebody else. And that's why initially it's like 30 days, you start sponsoring because you have 30 days more than somebody else has. And there's reasons maybe to wait a little bit beyond that, but the point is, work with others, get out of it. So does that help?
Yeah.
Does that help? Okay.
You need to drink some water because I'm worried about you. You don't have any water. I'm drinking.
So not only do you take care of your needs, you take care of my needs too. I'm willing to take direction.
Sorry.
I'm not sure what that was. This I know is good water from the well in Linwood. Actually, they have good water here, I just remembered. Okay. How do you work the How program as a vegan? Anyone? And then how do you do How if you're a nutritarian?
What?
Jenny Googled that for me last night. I don't remember. But it had something to do with Joel Fuhrman and something about nutrient-dense foods. So I have no idea about, I've been absent for a long time, and I've done many different things in my abstinence. I just have, I have like a zillion vegetables. I can pick which ones. I can limit them. I can take out certain vegetables. I can take out certain proteins. I have a lot of proteins. And I've done a lot of different things. And there's a lot of choice on most food plans, and I can pick the most nutrient-dense things on there. I can't do any better about the nutritarian, but I was a vegan for how many years? 14 years? Abstinently, something like that. When I first started, I wasn't a vegan. I tried being a vegan and I kept binging. And I asked actually a different nutritionist, not the other one I mentioned earlier, who dealt with food addicts. And she highly recommended that I don't start out as a vegan. She had highly recommended I do some type of animal product because vegetarian proteins are high in carbohydrate, and I'm a carbohydrate addict. And so I started out with, I started drinking milk. I got sick on it, but not as sick as I got from binging, I'll tell you. And I got over being sick, and I did that for a little over a year. And then after I was over a year, I worked very carefully with my sponsor to take the dairy out and took eggs out. And I became a vegan over the course after having about 2 years of abstinence. But I didn't jump into it right away. I was willing to, because if you're vegan and you're binging, is every product you're eating completely free of lard, eggs, and dairy? Because I was trying to be a vegan, and then I was eating ice cream. And pizza. I wasn't really a vegan, but when I was trying to be absent, I was trying to be a vegan. So I was willing to, for a while, for blood sugar purposes, eat some animal products, and then I became a vegan. I was a vegan for many years. So does that answer that? Okay.
We have a question over here.
Okay, I have a few more here, but go for it, Lauren.
No, I just want to say whoever asked that question, that I have a sponsee who's a vegan, and she has a vegan nutritionist, so if you want to see me afterwards, I can put you guys
in touch. Awesome. Why do we fear talking about specific foods? It's funny because I was just nervous, like, oh, I just said pizza and ice cream, so thank you. Shouldn't be working to acknowledge triggers and learn to cope. I think that's where some of the humor in AA meetings comes from, laughing at ourselves. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Yes, yes, yes. So Fred, who started this program, he laughed all the time and he was really funny. He was like a comedian. I'm not really funny like that. But it's so important to laugh and laugh at ourselves and not be so damn serious. Yes, it's a deadly disease and we take our disease seriously, but we don't take life seriously. We take the disease seriously enough to get the medicine, to take our medicine of going to meetings, our medicine of, for me, getting the scale, weighing and measuring my food, calling my sponsor, the medicine of writing, doing the reading, but I don't take life so seriously anymore. And when I'm in the food, it's pretty miserable when I'm not, except when I'm kind of high and drunk for a few minutes on the food, and then I crash and life sucks, so. Yes, I absolutely agree with you. I You know, if you can't stand hearing about food in an OA meeting, how can you stand walking out this door and living in this society? And billboards everywhere. Food is everywhere, everything. I absolutely agree. There is a physical reason for it. When you hear the foods, it can start to cause kind of a neuropathway thing of thinking about them and the craving starting. So there's some physical reasons for it, but you're right, that's going on out there anyway. I like being able to talk about specific foods sometimes, but sometimes you can feed the disease with it. There's a difference between kind of talking about it in a surrendered way and talking about them in a way that's kind of like, oh, we're all getting high thinking about it. So maybe it's trying to prevent that because, you know, we are addicts. Yes?
It was interesting. I went to a treatment center for compulsive overeating back in 2010, and one of the things is there was always a facilitator at the table at all our meals, and there was no food talk during meals, and it made us all realize how much we talked about food. Because, like, the food, you know, when you think about it, it's like, oh, this is great. How's yours? What is that? Oh, I love it when we did. And it was just, it was actually a challenge. We sort of looked at each other like, what the hell is this? So, you know, it was interesting yeah. to realize that for so many of us, it's not even just the mentioning of it, it's just we've spent a lot of our lives talking about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Do you want to say something?
I was going to say that I also go to a lot of AA meetings, and, you know, there's a little bit of difference between someone who mentions alcohol or drinking and going on a drunk log. It's the same thing in OA meeting. You know, we can talk about food without having to go on a food log. And those are quite different things. And you know, I also feel that, I don't agree with the idea of not being able to talk about food in an OA meeting. That's like the elephant in the room. That's why we're here.
Yeah.
But you know, with moderation and balance, like yeah. everything else is better.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so two more. And if anybody else has any questions, oh, we got a few more. So what's the difference between HOW and the other and other OA program? I think it says other. Is it okay if I do a little history around HOW and how HOW started and why? Does people interested in that? Okay, so back to the gray sheet. The gray sheet was that original plan that wasn't on a gray sheet originally. It was like a pink sheet or an orange sheet or a green sheet. Ended up gray sheet. And food plans, and it was the food plan. And there were a lot of meetings set up around that food plan. And a lot of people found recovery. A lot of people were losing weight. A lot of people in OA weren't. A lot of people, they weren't losing the weight. They didn't know, you know, when we were overeating, when we weren't overeating. And so they kind of like, well, let's just do 3 times a day, nothing in between, 1 day at a time. So that's the other food plan, 301. 3 times a day, nothing. So there was a lot going on. These people that were against food plans, people that were for food plans. Roseanne writes a little bit about it in her history. She was one of the people that was against food plans, so it's a little biased because she says they're obsessed over here. And then those people were saying, well, you're fat and serene, and she does mention all that. So, you know, there was a lot of judgment in both directions. And a lot of people, it was working, and they wanted to spread it, and people were looking for it, and it was growing. And in New York at the time, Fred S., who started HOW, he joined the fellowship in the 70s. So OA started in the, like, 1960, right around there, 1959-60. And in the 60s, the gray sheet, you know, started pretty early on, and these groups started. Well, the gray sheet was there, but it was kind of, it wasn't as strict or clear in New York. And there's a couple of people named Dorsey and somebody, a gentleman, and they knew the people in California were abstinent and something was working. They didn't know what it was. So they flew, Dorsey and this guy, they flew there, and they interviewed Alta, a woman named Alta, who was the chair of Overeaters Anonymous at the time. And they met where her meetings were in Westminster, California, and said, what are you guys doing there? That's working. And so she's like, okay, so the first thing we do is we put them all on the gray sheet. You know, we get them clear-headed. They're on the gray sheet. So everybody's doing this gray sheet. Then we take them through the steps. We give them a set of questions. First we ask them, you know, write about your food history. And then we ask them to write about this. And they were like obsessively writing everything she said down. Da, 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 da. And then when they went home, they came up with a list of 21 questions. And they had this big meeting in New York, and everybody came, and it was on Long Island, and they said, this is the new way of doing OA that works. Everybody's on the gray sheet, and you do these 21 questions, And, you know, people were kind of up in arms. It was controversial, but a lot of people were with it. And so a lot of meetings started. And they took Westminster, California name, and they called those groups OA Westminster. So the OA Westminster were the gray sheet groups that started in California and that the Howe guy was exposed to, Fred S. And then there were breakoffs from that. There was something called OA Plus, which Fred jokes is you get a little bit more food, and that's what the plus was. It, you get to eat half a chicken instead of two pieces of chicken, and I don't know, twice as much yogurt or something. And so then there are a few breakoff groups, and then the Cambridge Gray Sheet groups, they started then too, and those are what are still around today. The other ones have left. And then Fred, he was on the board of directors, it's called Board of Trustees in OA. And when he would go to do service, there were a lot of people that were the moderate mealers, and then he would be tempted and he would do moderate mealing, then he'd come home and go on gray sheet, and then he'd do moderate mealing, and he said it was all crazy making. And he ended up moving to Arizona in 78, and he really admired this one woman and what she wanted, what she had. And she said the obsession was over and she could relax and enjoy her food, and she was a moderate mealer. So he was gonna try it. And within a few months, he put on between 50 and 75 of his 50 pounds he lost, or whatever it was. And he was desperately looking for anybody who was doing gray sheet. And he was very much judged there, and he saw a lot of drama, a lot of food logs, people. And they had a lot of rules in those meetings, too, that to speak, you need to have a certain number of days of abstinence, and, you know, positive pitches, not dumping. And, you know, they had very strict rules in those meetings, and he was used to that. And so anyway, after almost dying, he found somebody else who was in relapse in Phoenix and who was also once on the gray sheet. So they said, let's start a meeting. And they talked for hours. They started a meeting. But let's not call it Westminster. They're going to kill us. Let's not call it gray sheet. They're going to kill us. And so they thought, oh, there's this really spiritual AA meeting, H-O-W, just after the big book. Why don't we take that name? So the first meeting, they called it a HOW meeting. So basically, it was the gray sheet. It was those questions. There were rules about being abstinent and sharing. And nobody could share because nobody was abstinent. So then they had a lot of readings. They just read from the material. And how can you lose? It's a winner. They read from the big book. And they read this, chapter 5, chapter 3. And that's why the HOW meetings, there's a lot of readings. There used to be even a lot more than that. And anyway, that's how HOW started. And it kind of changed from there. And so the original food plan from HOW was the gray sheet, and it changed over time. And then, that was in 79, and it really spread. It didn't really spread until the mid-80s when somebody in Southern California got abstinent, long distant with Fred, and then she was a go-getter, and she started these meetings, and HOW spread all over Southern California. And that was the biggest HOW intergroup anywhere. It was Southern California. In fact, we got our materials from Southern California HOW. That's where we got our guide booklets. You know, there's questions the first 30 days, then there's the after the inventory questions, and then the questions for steps 6 through 9, and then the, you know, there's lots of different questions and things, and we got our materials from them. And then later, some of the, you know, there's always been fights. There's always been these OA wars of people, and whoever has the most kind of power at World Service, we're trying to, you know, some people they're for the Lord's Prayer, some people are against the Lord's Prayer, some people are for food plans, they're against them, and we're really into control. We want to make everybody else do or not do what we are or aren't doing in OA, which is a total violation of the traditions. Traditions, they're, in AA, they're very lackadaisical. You know, do what works, guys. And if it doesn't work, you're kind of going to die, and I don't have to worry about it, you know? I don't have to try to control you. I mean, that's like three of the traditions talk about that. So anyway, World Service was saying, you can't do that anymore. You can't have food plans. You can't have requirements for sharing. And I have all the history on me if anyone wants to read it. And eventually, the Intergroup of Southern California, they said, if you don't change these ways, you can't use the name Overeaters Anonymous anymore. And this all happened in my first year of abstinence. And I could not deal with it. I could not. I just... And by the time kind of a lot of it was settled, I was more involved. I followed my sponsor everywhere in service, and I was going to intergroup, so I knew more of what was going on. But by then, it was kind of all... And they got kicked out. They said, you know what? We are not leaving Overeaters Anonymous, but we're not going to... We took a vote. Every meeting voted, and we decided we're not going to change what we're doing. And some of the groups decided to change it and keep the OA name, and the other ones, they had to form a different 12-step fellowship. And you know, that's to me, that's the traditions. The traditions are there. The first tradition is here for unity, that there's only one Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's group autonomy. There's an AA meeting where people are literally dealing drugs and beating each other up in the room. I've gone to it. It's entertaining. And there's an AA meeting with a dress code, that women have to be dressed a certain way, men have to be dressed a certain way, and only certain people can speak. They both get to use the name Alcoholics Anonymous and everything else in between. There's not an attempt to control, and we have this thing in our fellowship. And so now we have all these splinter groups, and we have about 8 to 10 different food recovery fellowships. And frankly, it's a pain in the butt when you're traveling, because when I go somewhere, I have to look up 6 different things to try to find where there's a meeting with recovery. It's not all under the umbrella of OA anymore. So a lot of our Howell brothers and sisters are actually excommunicated. And it was actually the OA Howell Intergroup in Seattle that we had a motion at World Service to admit we were wrong and invite them back in, and that created some controversy, and it never got voted on. And anyway, Diana.
Quick question, and I'm sorry I missed earlier, sure. But did you explain what, because some people don't know what the gray sheet is.
Oh, so the gray sheet is the original food plan. It's a very low carbohydrate food plan. No sugar, no flour, no grains.
Except you get that little bit of wheat germ.
If you're not wheat intolerant, you can have wheat germ. And you can Google it online, look at it. It's just a diet. But for many people, it takes the cravings away. But if you don't get it from a sponsor, it's just a diet. So if you go, and if Gray Sheet is for you, get a Gray Sheet sponsor and work the program around following it. And, you know, and the Howell food plan is a different food plan, and a lot of the OA Howell groups don't define a food plan anymore, but generally it's sugar, flour-free, weighed and measured. So that's the history of Howell. And then really, you know, regular OA is just, they don't necessarily do all or any of that. I mean, every group is autonomous. Every group is free to do what it wants to do and change things as they want. So you kind of have to go to each group to see what they're doing. And if you're trying to figure out what to do, look for a sponsor who's doing it, who's free of the obsession, free of the compulsion. But I have to say, what they're doing may not work for you. I have had one of my closest friends on the planet has been an abstinent and Overeaters Anonymous longer than I have, close to 30 years. And she does not get the phenomenon of craving from her substance. She just doesn't. And she can have a little bit, and she doesn't get any cravings or anything. And I've ended up with her sponsees that didn't work with them, and they were binging, and then they ended up coming to me and they got abstinent. But then she got the sponsees that didn't need to come to me. So, because they didn't necessarily have that phenomenon of craving. So, you know, Gamblers Anonymous, OA was based on Gamblers Anonymous. People don't get the phenomenon of craving from touching raffle tickets. It's what they think about the raffle tickets. Sorry, I know there's a raffle going on. But really, it's an activity addiction. It's not a physical addiction. So the premise of OA was about the action of overeating. Well, some of us are also biochemically addicted, like heroin addicts. That if you get a little bit in your system, you start to get cravings. And it's important to find out if you're one of those and you're trying to do it like an activity addiction, it's probably not going to work. So,
Well, if you don't have a physical addiction, if you don't have physical cravings, are you an addict?
That's a great question. A lot of people will say you're not really an addict. But hell, come here anyway if you want to do what we're doing. Yeah. Yeah. So she says if you have the mind obsession. So there's the question was, are you really an addict if you don't have the phenomenon of craving? Well, according to the big book, you're not.
Right.
But you know what? These rooms are big enough for anyone who wants to come. And if, you know, they talk about the real alcoholic and the hard drinking alcoholic. And if you're a hard drinker but not a real alcoholic, you're welcome to AA and quit drinking. Mm-hmm. You don't have to pass a certain test. And it'll help you quit, because we also have it. We're also a support group. We also offer emotional recovery. We offer other things. So you don't have to, you know, I think it's okay to come and get recovery, no matter you're addict or not. What do you do when you want something you cannot have? Wow. Okay, for number one, there's nothing I can't have. I can have anything I want. And as soon as I can't have something, I'm screwed. As soon as I say that to myself. I drove people crazy my first year of abstinence because people would say to me, well, can you have this? I'm like, I can, yes I can, but today I choose not to eat it. And I would drive them nuts because like, I just want to know what I can make for you. But I, if I said I can't have that, that's gonna, my addict is gonna be feeding on that. So how to deal with cravings about anything. If I know something's gonna create the phenomenon of craving and I'm obsessing about it, pick up the phone and talk about it. Pick up the phone. I have to pick up the tools. The phone is the easiest one. And now I talk about meetings. Meetings and phone can come together now with the miracle of phone meetings. And I mean, the Grace Sheet meetings alone, what is it, like 14 meetings a day?
Yeah.
Overeaters Anonymous, like 20 meetings a day. There's other 12-step programs. There's like a lot. There, anytime, day or night, almost. Maybe not anytime, but many times there are meetings. You can pick up the phone, talk about it, tell my sponsor about it, write about it, pray about it, get on my knees. God, please remove this obsession. Please focus on, if I pray, God, please help keep me from, and I start thinking about, please keep me from brownies, please keep me from this, I'm going to be thinking about those things. But if I say, God, keep me abstinent, if I focus on what I want and not what I do, as soon as I keep, it pulls me out of it. It pulls me out of it just to pray for abstinence, pray for freedom, pray for relief from obsession. And get the heck out of there. If my drug is right there, get the hell away from it. There's, unless I have business to be there, but if I'm on shaky ground, get out of there anyway. Come up with an excuse. I don't need to be exposed any more to my drug than I have to. Sometimes I've had to look away at billboards. Like, you know what? There's certain billboards that start causing cravings for me, especially in Los Angeles. I just have to turn away. Okay, it's 3:30. Should we stop for a quick potty break? Or should go on? I see enough nods. Why don't we do a 10-minute break and come back here? Okay. Thank you.
Are we going to be asking any more questions?
Okay, so thank you everyone. Could somebody just let them know we're starting in case they want to be in here? They don't have to, they can stay and have fun. I wanted to finish something about meetings, though. I was talking about meetings, about the difference between regular way. Meetings are autonomous. I live in an area where there isn't how, and I travel so much I can't really start a meeting and then disappear because I'm sometimes gone half the year. So I do a lot of the phone meetings. I do how phone meetings. I do Grace Sheet phone meetings, and then I found where I live. I look for where people are abstinent. You know, the co-founder of How, he said he'll look for recovery under a rock. He doesn't care what the group's called as long as people are really abstaining and they're abstinent and they're in recovery. So what I found is the OA 90-day meetings where I live. And it's interesting because one of the reasons a lot of the How groups got kicked out is they had a 7-day absence requirement to share. And the reason they're called 90-day meetings is because it suggested you have 90 days of abstinence before you're allowed to share. And I'm like, how come they didn't get kicked out? But that's why I have 4 steps to deal with those things. So I'm involved with the OA 90 there, doing service. I'm on the phone, bridge lines. And if anybody's ever interested in those numbers, they can see me and I can give them phone numbers for those. So I wanted to tell, so this morning was all, I mean, the whole retreat's about surrender. And surrender, again, is giving up control, letting go of control, so that there's space, so that there's room for a power greater than me to do for me what I can't do for myself, starting with my food addiction, my obsession, my what I'm eating. And so I have to get out of the driver's seat. The third step in the... agrees with Dr. Thibault. He says that the way to have surrender is through disciplined actions. Disciplined actions keep that surrender going. And the 12 and 12 says, like all remaining steps, step 3 calls for affirmative action. For it is only by action that we can cut away the self-will that has always blocked the entry of God, or if you like, the higher power from our lives. Again, you don't have to believe in God, but the power that can control my food intake is blocked by our own self-will, our own getting in the driver's seat, our own trying to power this thing up, control it ourselves. And then we need an affirmative action to cut away. And then later on it says that that the key to this is willingness. Once we have placed the key of willingness in the lock and have the door ever so slightly open, we find we can always open it some more. Though self-will may slam it shut again, as it frequently does, it always responds the moment we again pick up the key of willingness. So willingness is the key to cut away the self-will. It's that disciplined action that keeps us in that surrendered place, that humble place. And so it's through actions. So surrender came from reflection. It came from getting it. My life is shit. I can't control the food. Actually, somebody gave me another question. How can I make absence the most important thing? When I slip, it doesn't necessarily cause me to crave or go nuts, so it's hard to get there. So if a sponsee of mine said this to me, I would work on first step with that sponsee. I would say we got to go deeper. And the first step, it's also looking at the deadly nature of this disease. There's a level of denial that this is a deadly disease, and it's a progressive disease. And if you can't see that by looking at your own history, you can look at other addicts that do just what you're doing, who are a little bit further, and see that how they're risking death. They're at death's door, or they've died. I know people in this fellowship that have died. A friend of mine that I've been in this room with has hung himself. He could not get abstinent. And in the despair, he hung himself. And he did not make it. And there is no difference between me and him, because I don't have any more willpower to make it than he did. So getting that, understanding that, me seeing the woman who weighed 200 more pounds than I did, and the woman in treatment who was so brain dead from starving herself, she couldn't get help anymore. Seeing where this disease is where I'm headed with it, that can help me to get the willingness and that surrender. And to know that, and there may be, you know, a slip. Oh, it's no big deal. It's a slip. But when you have that drug in your system, it's hard to see the bigger picture. It's hard to know. Your mind might be telling you it's no big thing, but it's a big thing. And if you read the big book, a lot of the answers are in the big book, and more about alcoholism. There's a man who kept experimenting with putting a little bit of whiskey in his milk. If I just put a little bit of whiskey in my milk, maybe it's not that big of a deal. But when he can see, and maybe if he never connected that whiskey in his milk till later in the evening when he got drunk, maybe later he, you know. And sometimes I get cravings 3 days after I put something in my body. I don't even know that I'm triggering, because cravings last up to 5 days, and when they're in your system. And maybe I've white-knuckled it, and on day three, I can't tell you how many day threes I've gone back out. That cravings are so strong for me on days 3, 4, and 5. So doing inventories to see what are the real consequences of the slip, mentally, physically, emotionally, and working with my sponsor on it, really getting into the first step with that. And there was another one, I didn't understand it. How do you make calls when you know you can't get dinner made on time? So I think that means you don't have enough time to make calls. Okay, so basically, you have a later dinner. You prioritize your recovery first. And that's going back into step three. So see, one and three go together. I have to know the deadly nature of this disease. I have to know what this disease is costing me to surrender. And then that surrender gets me to that willingness place to put my recovery first. You know, I've heard this said time and time again, that recovery is not, I don't build my recovery around my life. I build my life around my recovery. I prioritize. There's lots of choices too. So I can pick the times I'm not supposed to be at work to go to meetings, etc. But I prioritize somewhere in my week. I look at my week. Where am I going to fit in my calls? Where am I going to fit in my meetings? Where am I going to make my sponsor call? And then, you know, I prioritize it before other things. Sometimes I mean, if it gets me out of the food, I'm going to have a hell of a lot of more energy to do all those other things in life that I want to do. Because I don't have that time where I'm hungover, drunk, in withdrawal, binging, obsessing, you know the whole cycle. I'm free. I have all that time. So the willingness to carve out the time in my life to do that. And I won't be willing. I won't make it a priority unless I have that surrender piece. So I just want to encourage people to keep working on your first step, that writing. Share it with each other. Share it with your sponsor. I'm a big fan of staying on the first step for at least a whole month. I've had sponsors had me read step one in here. It's only 4 pages long every day for months. Keep reading it. Keep reading it. Oh. Oh, okay.
The breakout session
started
before.
Wow. All right. So we're not going to do writing. We're not going to do writing. I'm going to give you a writing assignment, though. But we're not going to do it in here. And it's going to be about willingness. So I want to talk about willingness is the key. Willingness is the key for recovery. You surrender to get willing, and then willingness are the, it's not what you say, oh, I'm willing to do this, but if I'm not doing it, how do I know I'm really willing to do it? So it's really powerful. Just write out a list of what are the things I am willing to do, because I've been doing them. I'm willing to go to an OA retreat. I'm willing to write a list of the things you know you're willing to do because you're doing them. And then write out a list that you haven't been willing to do yet. First, the first list is what I am, what I've been willing to do already. I know I'm willing to do it because I've been doing it.
For my OA program.
What tools am I using? What steps am I working? You know, am I going to meetings? How many meetings? Which meetings am I going? Am I willing to try a new approach? Am I willing to get a new sponsor if what I'm doing isn't working? Am I willing to try something different? Am I willing to go to 90 meetings in 90 days? Am I willing to follow a weighed and measured food plan? Am I willing to get a sponsor who will ask me to follow a weighed and measured food plan? Am I willing to cut out sugar and flour? Am I willing to cut out all sugar, even fifth or lower, the 99 names of sugars, which, by the way, somebody requested this, so everyone's going to get a copy of that. You know, where am I in the willingness of? So what have I been willing to try so far? The next column, what are some things that I want to step up to the plate and do? What's the next thing for me to be willing to do?
And willingness if you don't have willingness?
Okay, thank you. I'll do that. That's next. Get me in one moment.
All right.
So write out the next things I want to be willing to
yes,
do.
Yes, that I know that this, and I think I'm willing, but I haven't done them yet. You know, I think I'm willing to do this. I'm about ready to do this. I haven't done them yet. That's the next column. And the third column is I'm not willing to do this. And the big book says that we need to be willing to go to any lengths for our recovery. So it's really important to get clear what those three lists are. The third one is, I'm not willing to do this. I'm not willing to go to treatment. I'm not willing, you know, because that's somewhere in there too. Some people, it says in the big book, some of us need a definite hospitalization. It says it in several chapters. I'm not willing to go to treatment. Whatever you're not willing to do, to write that down. And what Carol just said, start taking those action steps and get on our knees. Unless you're not willing to get on your knees yet, but to do the best you can and ask for the willingness. Even if you don't believe in God, it's not about believing in anything. Just pray for the willingness. Help me to be willing to do the next things. And if those don't work, look at that last list. And help me to be willing to do that. The three lists
are what you're willing to do now.
What I'm willing to do now.
I'll write it down.
He's going to write it out. And the reason I know I'm willing to do them is because I'm doing them. Okay. Second list is what is next for me to do that I think I'm willing to do.
And where I'm not. Okay.
And then the third list is I'm not willing to do this. And start adding the word yet to that. And if you can share this list with someone else, please do. Please share this, write this out, and share it. And then start, like Carol said, to go to your higher power and your own sacred space to pray for the willingness.
Yeah, I would love a copy of the
sugar.
Okay, you'll all get it emailed to you.
Oh, okay, great.
Okay. Okay, and now we have breakout sessions coming up, and Carol's going to do some announcements. Are we good?
What are the breakout sessions?
And Carol's going to discuss that with you right now. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you.